last week on Cheaters Never Win. You know, Derek, I'm just happy that the first round's going as well as it is. You know, if there's any way we could just, you know, get to game seven and have a chance, I think I'll be happy with how, regardless of what the outcome is.
How can you not be? Like we talked about, you know, if you told us a few months ago that we would be in this position, we would happily take it. I think it's been a good run this season. There's a lot to build on for the future. And it's really hard to argue about where we are.
Yeah, I mean, as we're healthy, we're, you know, Svech is down, but Martinook's coming back and playing, and Ferland and Svech should probably be back for game seven. So the team's looking healthy going into game seven, and I'm sure it's going to be one of those guys who are going to knock it out for us. So, Derek, I think it's been a great night. Thanks for coming. Thanks for our guests. Thanks for our sponsors. And we'll see y'all next week.
Then what happened, Mike?
Then what happened, Derek? I'll tell you what happened. This happened.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mike Flanagan, and I am the advocate for my client, Brock McGinn, the undisputed, undefeated champion of Game 7, the mayor of Suplex City, currently residing in the District of Columbia, living in the heads, the mind spaces of every single Capitol fan ever. And I tell you this, as my client, Brock McGinn, skated across the crease in double overtime of Game 7 and tipped in the pass from Justin Williams. He took himself to levels never seen since June 19th, 2006. Ladies and gentlemen, bow at the feet of our client, Brock McGinn.
So do I just hit the X button now? Or?
Yeah, it's a good idea.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this, the round two edition.
Oh, yeah.
Of the Cheaters Never Win Hockey Podcast, brought to you by our client and the good folks at Bottle Mix, the good folks, Don, the Caniac Realtor, and all sorts of friends. My name's Mike.
I'm Derek.
We got a lot to talk about tonight, Derek.
We do. I'm glad your voice didn't go out cutting that promo in the intro.
As Tom, a.k.a. Mr. Workrate, has said once, he said, you know, if you give Mike Flanagan a microphone, be careful. He'll probably cut a promo on you. And he's quickly realized, don't need a microphone to cut a good promo.
Well, I mean, you did just cut one into a microphone.
I did. But, I also bought the microphone.
Cut one into a mic.
Mic and a mic.
The maturity is off the charts right now, Mike. I don't know how. We talked about on the rundown that is not written down anywhere. Like, we want to talk about Game 7. We want to talk about Games 1 and 2. I think we can still talk about Games 1 and 2. How much more is there to say about Game 7 after you just nailed that?
I mean, if you just, the collective feeling in Caniac Nation of Game 7 was something special. I mean, there were, you know.
That game was a roller coaster.
I'm going to say it like this, Derek, and I mean this in the utmost respect to everybody listening. Brock McGinn's goal was baby making hockey. I mean that. I mean if there was a Barry White goal, that was it. I mean I'm dating myself going Barry White. I mean,
would you say that goal laid someone down by the fire?
Potentially.
Yeah.
I mean, Al Green saw that goal and went, "Damn."
Al Green talks like that?
I think so. Okay. I assume so in my mind. Anyway, so no, that was Game 7 was phenomenal. So much fun. And then, you know, we got what we wanted, which was the Islanders in round two. And so far, so good, Derek.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we
it has not been pretty.
And we somewhat.
But I don't care.
In kind of the fake cold open there, we kind of talked about, you know, the lack of injuries and, whoo, buddy, how things have changed in a week.
Just a little bit. So it sounds like from Rod Brindamore's press conference today, Svechnikov doesn't need to be cleared by doctors anymore, which means he is cleared by doctors. So it's more his comfort, his vision, those sort of things that are maybe the stuff that's like he can play, just can't. Can the player tolerate whatever sort of, I don't know, inconveniences or little pain thresholds or whatever it may be? I didn't mean to use the word little in a disparaging way because Svechnikov is a big, strong boy. Ferland, it sounds like he's probably closer to playing than not, but I wonder, again, still based off of what Brindamore said kind of dismissively about him in the first round. And then Martinuk, Brindamore mentioned that he didn't skate today. But that does not have any bearing on whether or not he plays tomorrow night slash tonight slash whatever you are able to get this podcast out.
Yeah. So, again, the reason the health of those three guys is so important is not only because it has been very tough sledding against this New York Islanders team, three goals scored in two games on the island, but those three goals still resulting in two wins for your Carolina Hurricanes. Saku Mantalainen out for multiple weeks after having hand surgery. Trevor Van Riemsdyk, I think we can all safely assume that he is out for the foreseeable future, save he making an Eric Cole-like Game 6 Stanley Cup Final comeback. I would not expect that we're going to see Trevor Van Riemsdyk the rest of this playoff season.
The way he got hit into the boards there, I mean, I think it's, I'm not taking a big leap to say it's probably collarbone related.
Yeah, I've got a, you know, I would suspect that's a fractured clavicle as well, just the way he was holding his arm and the angle and everything. So, and then, you know, that's a 3 to 5 week injury. So we hope TVR comes back. The good news is we have good bottom pairing defensive depth. Hayden Fleury probably going to draw into the lineup for TVR. Jake Bean called up from the Charlotte Checkers. And, you know, we actually had a very quick conversation about this, but with all of the ills of the power play, do the Canes potentially go 7D, 11 forwards and run somebody like Jake Bean out there on one of the power plays to try to spark a little power play?
No.
Okay, you're wrong. I think yes.
So you would put you would put Jake Bean in Wednesday night's game.
I think you put Jake Bean in one of the two games if he's up for both games.
And do you play him on defense? Is he just playing like 5 minutes on the power play? How do you play him?
So here's what I'm thinking, Derek. He's basically filling that 12th forward spot.
Sure.
Right. So that is a 7 minute or so spot. If he can play 4 minutes, you know, 3 to 4 minutes of power play time and get a minute, minute and a half on, you know, during the rest of the game and he's pulling 5-7, you know, 9 minutes, I don't see that as a detriment to this, particularly at home where Rod Brindamore and the coaching staff control the matchups. I don't want him out there against Barzell, Bailey, and
Lee
and Lee, but if he's out there against Uncle Leo, I don't think it's nearly as bad.
I would say the biggest reason beyond just the stage of where we are in the playoffs is you've seen how hesitant Brindamore is to make changes on this power play.
Agreed.
Much to the dismay of many a Canes fan. Like, God, how long did it take for Dougie to get more damn power play time? How long did it take for them to realize maybe running the same play of Nino trying to get the puck in the zone against the Capitals before they made even the most minor of change? So I don't think that they're going to make a lineup change at this point in the game.
I mean, you're probably right, Derek, which pains me to say that.
Thank you.
So let's just shift gears. Let's talk a little bit about tonight's guest again. Thank you guys for listening to Cheaters Never Win, an official part of the Sports Channel 8 podcast family.
Woo!
We have tonight is a guest laden episode, so we're not going to do a lot of analysis ourselves. We're going to talk to a lot of our guests three guests. This might never be our three separate guest interviews. One of them is a nicely recorded interview. It's just really quick. For those of you who had a chance to make it out to Brugaloo in downtown Raleigh this past weekend, Lord Stanley's Cup made an appearance on the courthouse steps of the Wake County Courthouse. Keeper of the Cup, Mike Bolt, was in town. We were fortunate enough to grab just a couple of minutes of Mike's time for a quick little interview. We'll throw that in here a little bit later.
I see why you call that one the nice interview, because I wasn't there.
No.
Mike, words hurt.
No, he's Canadian, which immediately makes him nice.
Oh, okay. That's
we
fair.
Also, well, we also spent some time talking about JC's ass.
With Mike Bolt?
No, although we did talk partial nudity with Mike Bolt, so stay tuned for that. And we also are going to have on Dan Saraceni from the Islanders blog Culture of Losing. We like Dan a lot, so we do not think we're going to have to treat him as a hostile witness. But if he says bad things about John Forslund, all bets are off.
We do reserve the right to change our mind.
Yeah. So guest-laden interviews tonight, so thank you guys for that. And Derek, as we begin to go into, let's focus a little bit on what do the Canes need to do tonight, game three, to really kind of take a stranglehold onto this series. You've seen the first two games, which was basically skating through caramel and fire-laden sticks of lasers.
Is laden on your, like, word of the day calendar?
I don't know. I'm drinking. The Canes have me drinking. I do not have a calendar. I do not have a word of the day calendar. Otherwise, I would learn new words.
Touche, salesman.
Thank you.
So I think the Canes need to do three things, and this is more analysis than you listeners normally get out of this podcast. I think the three things are, one, don't suck on the power play. That's just deep insight right there.
But how, Derek?
That's a good one. How did they not suck? I would defer to Pat Clark. He wrote a really cool article earlier this year about passes going across the Royal Road, cross ice passes. I think there are a lot of times the Canes, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, we're making too many passes that are too close, and we're not stretching the defense out to get those shooting lanes.
I think as I've been watching this, and again, I've been fortunate to have folks much smarter than I about hockey educate me on this. I don't think the puck is spending enough time below the goal. I think we need to get the puck in, and instead of playing the puck from high to mid, I think we need to be playing the puck from low to mid, and then making, instead of that skip pass across the Royal Road, potentially the skip pass out from low to high with bodies going to the net.
I'm very open to that as well.
The goaltending situation on the island has been so good. Again, as an Islanders fan, if you would have said, hey, the team that was putting up 4 and 5 a night on the Washington Capitals would only put up 3 on the aisle and you'd still be down 2-0, you'd have to be just supremely disappointed in that, right?
Absolutely. I expect the power play is going to be better at home. I really do. I think the team feeds off that energy. I think point number two that the team needs to do is not allow the quantity of high quality chances that they did, especially in game two. The amount of, there was, you know, at least one on O breakaway. There were 2-on-1 rushes. There were 3-on-2s. Just a lot of odd man rushes and quality chances. And while Mrazek, while he was in, and McElhinney, while he was in, made great saves, you cannot ask your goalie to make that many high-quality saves in a game without it biting you. And then the third thing is continue to not allow the Islanders to score a goal off their own stick. We're now 130-ish minutes into this series, and the Islanders have not had a puck legally beat a Hurricanes goaltender off of their own stick.
Yeah, the single goal scored by the Islanders came off of a rare kind of pay, maybe I'll call it a misplay by Jacob Slavin, mm-hmm. You know, trying to keep his stick down in the lane on the backside. Again, I say that not knowing hockey well enough to know, you know, should have Slavin slid there and, you know, attempted to block the pass or, you know, turned and more focused on the shooter.
Just that 1 in 100 bounce?
But Derek, the Carolina Hurricanes gave up one goal on the island to the New York Islanders, the team that swept the Pittsburgh Penguins in 4
right.
games. So I don't know if there's many things I can say disparagingly about this team. You know, the worst thing that happened in New York was the injuries. Manilainen gone, TVR gone, and quite possibly the most important hurricane for the last 2 months, Peter Mrazek, day-to-day with a groin issue.
Yeah, I would be surprised if Mrazek plays in Game 3, but I think there's probably a decent chance he plays on Friday in Game 4, and it might not be a terrible thing for McElhinney to come in. I think, you know, we talked about it a little bit during the game on Sunday. Are there many other backups around the league, let alone left in the playoffs, that you would rather trust than Curtis McElhinney?
No, and here's the thing. Like, I trust Curtis McElhinney for a game or two. Where we've seen Curtis runs into issue is when you're asking him to put together strings of 4, 5, 6 games. He comes in. I mean, the what he delivered in game two, coming in cold, having not played for the better part of, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
With basically a 17-save shutout with he as the goalie of record. Was absolutely phenomenal. Now he's going to be coming in and probably playing a full game Wednesday night. And he's going to have the pumped crowd in front of him, and hopefully he plays well. And then, if Mrazek is not ready, you know, and it looks like it's going to be more extended, do you have to find a way to get Alex Nedeljkovic some ice time? Because he is more of the Mrazek camp where he needs to play and doesn't really sit really well. So I don't know where that goes.
There's also a lot of conditions out there of what happens after Friday's game that I don't want to say out loud.
So, Derek, what you're saying is when the Carolina Hurricanes sweep the New York Islanders by winning Friday night's game at home after having convincingly...
Oh, the first ever cigarette review's on the way, Mike.
After having convincingly won on Wednesday night, again, the best thing that could happen for this team right now would be to get this series closed out quickly, to give these teams an opportunity to heal up, to get a little bit of rest. Because Game 7, no rest, immediately going to New York with the Columbus-Boston series being very tight and looking like a series that is definitely going more than 4 games, but could potentially go 6 or 7.
It seems like they're going to overtime every single night. Related, hang on, I might have a live in-game update for you, Mike.
Yeah, that's why folks listen to this podcast, Derek.
Stall for time a bit. The Score mobile app is loading. Oh, here we go. 5:48 left to go in the first. Bagels.
No score. And if it remains that way the rest of the game, I can confirm they will go to overtime. You know what else I can confirm?
What that?
We're going to our special guest.
This is Don Meyer with Fathom Realty, official realtor of Section 328. You can find me at becauseitshome.com. I am as passionate about helping you make your next move as I am about the Carolina Hurricanes. On average, homes sold by my firm sell 78 days quicker than other homes on the MLS, getting money in your pocket sooner. Buyers also get exclusive strategic representation in the seller's market. Contact me at becauseitshome.com to learn more.
Derek, as my mic just about falls over.
That's not a good sign.
It's not a good sign. You get an Islanders guy on the line, and immediately things start falling to shit. For a small period of time, thing was great and everything was perfect, and now things aren't going so well. No better person to talk to about the New York Islanders than longtime friend of the podcast. Over on Twitter, you may know him. He is at Culture of Losing. He works for Lighthouse Hockey. He's also on the Islanders Anxiety podcast. Dan Saraceni. Dan, welcome back to Cheaters Never Win, sir. First things first, what in the hell happened in round one?
I mean, I could ask you guys the same question, although the rounds went very differently for both of our teams. What happened was, from an Islanders fan standpoint, just completely awesome. The Islanders went in the second seed with home ice advantage in a playoff series for the first time since 1983, excuse me, 1988. They got their first sweep since 1983. I got my long dead streaks mixed up there. But they went up against the Penguins, and I mean, very few people actually picked them to win it, and nobody picked them to win in a sweep because that would be ridiculous. But they came out and they did what Barry Trotz has been preaching that they do, played their game, and the Penguins kind of fell right into it. They limited their high danger chances. They, you know, didn't take a ton of shots, but took a lot of their high danger chances themselves. And Robin Leonard just continued his great season that he's been having, and he was there the whole time. And I mean, he only gave up, I think it was 6 goals in 4 games or something like that. And you know, every time the Penguins scored, the Islanders came right back and scored on the next shift or a couple of shifts later. And they just, they had a killer instinct I had never seen before for this team in a very, very, very long time. And you know, even in game three, even going into game four, my friends and I were all like, well, they're obviously going to lose this, and maybe they'll win in five, but we did not expect them to come out with a sweep. And it was just awesome. But the way they played was even better. Like, they just, they deserved to win that series. It wasn't luck. And, you know, that's kind of how it's been going this season. They've deserved to win a lot, and people are like, oh, it's luck. It's not going to last. But, no, they're pretty good. It's just been a weird season.
Yeah, so playing off that, before each season, the 328 staff all puts together our predictions of where every team is going to end up in the standings at the end of the following, that next year's campaign. Back in October, every single one of us, and you can still find it at section328.com, had the Islanders either last or seventh in the Metro Division. Now, in fairness, about half of us still had the Hurricanes missing the playoffs, so we weren't exactly, you know, just drinking the Kool-Aid here. But,
right,
you know, we didn't buy into the Islanders, and it's a combination of losing John Tavares and not being a great team the year before, but Barry Trotz has come in and obviously made a hell of an impact. When did you and other Islanders fans buy into the fact that you guys are a good team, you are a playoff team, and you had a chance to be one of the last eight teams remaining in the league this year?
That's a good question. And actually, don't feel too bad, because we did a round table at Lighthouse Hockey before the season, and all of us picked them to miss the playoffs too. Only one of my friends said, heck yeah, they're going to make the playoffs. Why wouldn't they? They'll be better off without Tavares. Now they got Trotz. He was the only one. And I was like, well, they could make the playoffs, but that would fall into the weird stuff happens category, which, you know, it kind of happens in the NHL every year, like expansion teams making the finals and things like that. But for us, you know, it's hard to say, because, you know, everybody's kind of different. But what Trotz talks about in terms of when the team started to believe was a trip through Dallas. Well, they went to Colorado, Glendale, Vegas, and then Dallas all in 1 week. It was early in December. And you know how those road trips are. Like, you know, that's kind of the make or break. See, like, they kind of had their heads above water. They were getting by on a lot of luck, and things were kind of, you know, kind of taking shape, but not really great. Nothing, they weren't very consistent. And this was kind of that season, that section where it was like, all right, if they go 0-4 on this trip, they're basically cooked, and they're not gonna dig themselves out of that hole. But they went 3-1, and again, like we were saying, you know, they let up only, they only gave up one goal each in wins in Colorado, in Glendale, and in Dallas. And that was when the Avalanche were really super hot, and the Stars too. And that was when the team understood this way, this style of hockey, this game plan that Trotz and the coaching staff has laid out for them can work, and they can win, and they can do it consistently as long as they all follow the guidelines. And from there on, they just took off. And from through December and through January and into February, they were one of the hottest teams in the league. And that really basically established them as the first place team for a long time. And it wasn't until the end of the season where they kind of fell back into second place. But that was really it. And I think that probably holds still for a lot of us too. And maybe some people were holdouts, you know, they had to wait till February or January. But, you know, once the advanced stats start rolling in and you start looking at them and you're like, you know, this is working. This is a good team right now, despite the fact that most people outside of Islanders fans can't name a single Islander, maybe not aside from Matt Barzell. It works. And again, it seems pretty sustainable and seems like a plan going forward. And we're all about Trotz now. I call it the Tao of Trotz. We hang on this guy's every word. I literally have a spreadsheet of, like, you know, things he's said all season long that are just like, you know, great ideas about hockey and life and business and, you know, relationships. we're all about this guy. We have given ourselves over to him implicitly. And so far it's worked out pretty well.
Well, you know, we in Carolina have the same thing. Unfortunately, we just follow Ric Flair. But so let's move on to kind of the play in the first two rounds. And if I were to tell you going into round two against a Carolina Hurricanes team that played pretty good offensive hockey and took the Washington Capitals to 7 games, if I had told you in the first two games you're going to give up only 3 goals on the island. How would have you felt about that performance?
I would have felt pretty good. That would sound pretty good. But if you told me that my team was only going to score 1 goal, I would feel a lot worse. It's been pretty weird. And, you know, again, like I was just saying, you know, when you look at the numbers and you look at the underlying stats, you're like, man, they're not playing that poorly. But just a couple of breakdowns in each game, you know, one breakdown in overtime. I mean, that's all you need, really, in overtime. And, you know, Cal Clutterbuck makes a very ill-advised pass attempt, and it leads to some extended zone time and then a really nifty pass behind, you know, the end boards, and boom, game one is over. And we're like, oh, all right, well, they'll just come back in game two. And in full disclosure, I was actually watching Avengers Endgame throughout the entirety of game two. So when the movie was over and I checked my phone was totally off. When I checked my phone, it was immediately right after the Hurricanes had gone up 2-1. And, you know, again, everything I saw was just like, oh, they're playing so well. And all of a sudden, in a minute, now they're losing the game. And so they just never came back. So, yeah, I mean, they've done everything they can do but score. And, you know, the funny thing is, and no disrespect to Peter Mrazek, who's had a great season, you know, the strength of the Islanders going into this series was kind of like, well, the Robin Leonard's had a Vezina finalist season, and that gives the Islanders an edge. And you know how it is when you have a hot goalie, things can happen. But turns out it's been the other way around, and Mrazek has just made a handful more saves than Leonard, and there you go, you're up 2-0, and that's it. So the Islanders can really only stick to the game plan and hope that it finally shakes itself out in game three. Yeah. But you know, going into that madhouse down there is not going to be easy.
You mentioned Clutterbuck, and obviously at the beginning of game two, he had that hit on Trevor Van Riemsdyk, which I think most Canes fans agree was not a dirty hit. It was just unfortunate, the result for Van Riemsdyk. But at the end of the game, we saw Clutterbuck skating off really on one leg and being helped out by a teammate. But I didn't see what happened to Clutterbuck. Do you have any updates or info on what his status is going to be for game three / the rest of this series?
He definitely didn't practice today. The Islanders practiced on Long Island today and then flew down to Raleigh this afternoon. He didn't practice today. Trotz is very, very cagey when it comes to lineups, even the day of the game. So whatever I say now could totally be negated during, you know, after a pregame skate or something like that. He's just been held out, and I guess he's, I wouldn't say he's doubtful or questionable, but he's day to day, I think, was the way they had it now, which again, in Trotz world doesn't mean anything. He could be playing tomorrow. However, in practice, they did insert Michael Dal Colle onto the third line, I believe, with Josh Bailey and Brock Nelson. And then Tom Kuhnhackl moved down to the fourth line where Clutterbuck would normally be. If Clutterbuck doesn't play, that's actually a huge advantage for the Hurricanes, because there is something about Clutterbuck, Martin, and Cizikas when they get together. We've been calling them Voltron this year because there's something about them. When they get together, they are a force that can be reckoned with and can do a lot of damage out there. When there's only two of them and not the other guy, you know, it's like not quite as good. So that would be a huge thing. But as of right now, we don't exactly know. Getting to Colin would actually be kind of good. He was a pretty good player throughout for the Islanders this year. He was playing in Bridgeport, so I don't know if any Checkers fans might remember him, but he's turned himself into a pretty good defensive player. He hadn't had much offensively. He didn't add much offensively, but he's good at kind of keeping the puck in the zone and hounding it and getting it to players who can score. So it would be interesting to see Dal Colle in, but at the same time, I'm hoping that Clutterbuck is healthy, because without him, that line is not nearly as effective as it normally is.
Well, you know, as a Canes fan, you know, aside from maybe Nick Leddy, this could be the most no-name defense that we've seen in quite some time. And the Islanders' defense, I feel like, is really something special. That shutdown defense is doing things that I haven't seen in quite some time. So it seems like Nick Leddy, if I look at the fancy stats, has 2,017 block shots so far this series. But yeah. It seems like Nick Leddy's, you know, stopping everything. And then you've got the double P's being that shutdown pair. What's made this team so special? And what are some times that you've seen that defense get broken down this season that maybe the Canes should be focused on trying to do?
I mean, I give all the credit in the world to Trotz. It's, you know, it's hard for people. I've been saying this a lot on our podcast, like to really appreciate what the Islanders have done this season. You had to have watched them over the last, definitely last season and over the last like three or four seasons. But I mean, let's face it, nobody did that. Like the only people that did that were crazy people like me and my friends who watch the Islanders still for some reason. And so you can see the transformation. If you watched them last season when defense was not part of the game plan, like there was, it was every shift was a fire drill. Everybody was always stuck in their own zone. They didn't know what to do with the puck once they got it. This is the exact opposite, where everybody knows where they need to be at all times to move the puck as quickly and easily from their zone out to the neutral zone. And it's just all about preparation and all about kind of knowing where the other guy's going to be. And the word Trotz uses a lot is predictability. He wants predictability. He wants you as a player to know where your teammate is going to be so that you can all work in unison with one another. And that's what when he talks about, every coach talks about accountability, but Trotz is specific. He talks about being accountable to the guy next to you. And if you're doing your job, that guy's going to do his job and so on and so forth down the line. So that's really what it comes down to. They've always been pretty good players. I mean, Pulock was a guy who we heard about in the AHL forever, his big shot, and he was good, but he's really matured into really kind of a number one defenseman so far. And Pelech was a healthy scratch earlier this season. He was kind of struggling to get to understand the system and understand what Trotz, you know, was looking for. But once he did, he and Pulock have been really kind of tied at the hip, and they've been very good together. And I think with Pelech, it's a lot of kind of, this sounds like kind of lame, but it's sort of an intensity level thing. You know, he has a tendency to kind of flake out a little bit, but now he's been very attentive to detail, and he's just been, him and Pulock have been very good. Mayfield is a favorite of ours. He skates really well. He has offensive instincts that the other guys really don't have that much. But again, same thing, attention to detail has really helped him. You know, being taught how to actually do what he needed to do is a big difference from last year. And then Devon Taves is the guy we've been waiting for. We've joked about it for a while. I forget if it was last year or the year before, Garth Snow complained that, you know, part of the reason the Islanders missed the playoffs is because Devon Taves was hurt. And he was playing in the AHL. And we're like, how does an AHL defenseman's injury affect your NHL team? And now we kind of see why a little bit. Like, he's really good. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he was an AHL All-Star. He's got probably the best offensive instincts on the team, you know, on the defense outside of Letty. He skates as well as Letty does. And boy, he can do some pretty crazy things. And I mean, as he matures too, I can't wait to see where they go between him and Pulock. They're just really, they're two very, very special players, but the four of them, and then, you know, you got Letty, who's a veteran at this point. Boychuk is obviously hurt. And Thomas Hickey is in, and we love Thomas Hickey. Very smart guy. He loves his fish oils. He's always talking about fish oils, and he's a really, really great player. But he's playing on his offside, and I think I forget where I saw it, but it seems like the Hurricanes have already picked up on that a little bit. That, you know, you got a good player, but he's playing on his offside. He's been sitting for a while the other team, because the rest of the team kind of coalesced. So if there's an area of weakness, I would say it's that, but. You know, right now the Hurricanes have all of the hockey gods behind them, so they get a couple more posts and a couple more breakdowns, and they should be should be in good shape. But hopefully, no offense, but hopefully that doesn't happen, and then we come back to Brooklyn at some point.
All offense taken, Dan. Last question that I have for you. I started off by talking about how good both your blog and our blogs are at predicting things. So I want to wrap up my questions for you with predictions. Who takes the series, and in how many games?
See, I was afraid you were going to ask this, because if I say I think the Islanders take the series, then I'll feel like a big jerk if they don't. But if I say I don't think they will, then I'll feel like a big jerk for kind of giving up halfway through the series. you know, I mean, it's funny that Newsday is the local paper up here, and one person picked the Islanders in five. And I felt like saying, have you watched these guys? The Hurricanes are really good. That's preposterous. That is obviously out right now. You know, all I'm going to say is, if this series goes seven, then I think the Hurricanes win it, because I don't know if the Islanders have the mojo to beat Mr. Game 7. If the series goes six, then I think, you know, the Islanders can't. I think the Islanders could possibly win four games in a row. But if they don't, and they go to game seven, I would bet my house on Justin Williams, because because I don't know, that guy's got something going on that I don't, nobody really understands. It's a little bit mysterious, but we'll see what happens.
Well, he's got that thing. And that thing is a belief in not only Dan, I think here's what's kind of unique about this series. And again, thanks for taking some time out of your evening to chat with us here on the Caniac Realtor guest line. You've got two teams that have 100% bought into coaches that no one necessarily knew if they were going to make the impact that they were going to be able to make. And you've said multiple times during this conversation that, you know, everybody from the fans to the players have bought into Trotz. And I think that's part of what's special down here in Raleigh is that to a man, all of these guys have bought into the Rod Brind'Amour philosophy of next man up, play for each other, play the right way, have a little bit of fun, and let's go get them. It has been an absolute pleasure to watch these games with you. Last question from me. A little bit of controversy today out of Isles Nation, and I'd love to get your feelings on this. John Forslund, who is the normal TV and the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, has been covering this for the national media with NBC Sports. And Islanders fans, always looking for a reason to feel marginalized, felt like John Forslund was being biased when he referred to a goal who hit the crossbar as, and he said, you know what, it's okay, we're okay, after he confirmed that it did hit the crossbar, saying we, as in the broadcasters, didn't make a mistake, not we, the Carolina Hurricanes, were not scored against. A, what's your feeling on how that was as an Islanders fan, not necessarily an Islanders blogger, but B, why do Islanders consistently feel like they have to take the marginalized hat and take it to the nth degree?
This is a very expansive question.
I'll say, so Dan, try to knock this out in under 30 minutes.
I'll try. But before I get to that, though, I just real quick with Brind'Amour. I'm glad to hear that's really cool. And to be honest, like, if the Islanders weren't playing the Hurricanes, I bet a lot of Islanders fans would be rooting for the Hurricanes in this series, because there is a lot of sort of overlap between the two franchises. I would not want to cross Rod Brind'Amour, because he could probably break any of us in half, because he's Superman, basically. And also, you guys are very lucky, because the Islanders had Doug Waite last year. And he was, you know, former player, former captain. Yeah, let's get behind this guy. It didn't work out nearly as well for us as Rod Brind'Amour is working out for you. So that's pretty cool. As far as the Forslund thing goes, again, I didn't hear it because I was in the movies. I was watching All Hell Break Loose in the Marvel Universe. But, you know, the thing about it is that Islanders fans are always like this. Like, this is almost the original little brother team when you think about it, because they had the Rangers. The Islanders are only exist because of spite. Because the guys who built Nassau Coliseum didn't want a WHA team moving in there. They wanted an NHL team there. And so the NHL, you know, swooped in to Long Island before the WHA can put a team there. And they just end up sticking around for 45 or whatever it is years. So they are they always feel like, I equate Islanders fans to like wounded animals. They're very quick to jump on, you know, to attack people. They don't trust people very easily. They're prone to hiding in the corner sometimes, too, when things get too loud. And that's just how it is. And, you know, they're looking for any kind of tiny little slight that is going to set them off and, you know, kind of give credence to any conspiracy theory that they could possibly cook up. It's not the majority of the fans, I promise you. It's like anybody else. It's just the loudest people end up on Twitter or whatever and start screaming and yelling. Forslund actually had an article today in Newsday with Neil Best, who's been covering sports media forever. And, you know, look, he's a pro, and I don't know what to tell you. It's unfortunate that the loudest people end up screaming and yelling. But I think also a lot of it, too, has to do with the fact that our guy, Brendan Burke, is working like West Coast games. So we're kind of like, oh, you know, why don't we get our guy? Why do they get their guy and we don't get our guy? And that's kind of what it is. But you know what? Brendan's been doing West Coast playoff games now for NBC for like 2 or 3 years. So I'm not surprised that's happened, but the Islanders are getting AJ Molesko on the broadcast for game 3. So she's been covering the team this year. So sort of now things have balanced themselves out a little bit, but don't worry about it. Most Islanders fans, you can just completely ignore. I'll be honest with you. I try and do that. I follow probably less Islanders fans than anybody else, any other fan base on Twitter, to be honest with you. And that's probably why.
Well, the one fan no one should be ignoring is Dan Saraceni. He is over at Lighthouse Hockey at the Islanders Anxiety Podcast, and you can follow him for all of the Islanders updates over at cultureoflosing.com. Rapid fire, Lou Lamoriello, offer sheeting Mitch Marner, yay or nay?
Nobody offer sheets anybody, so I'm going to say nay, but that would be just totally awesome.
That would be
the awesomest thing. Yeah.
we here at Cheaters Never Win root for one team, Team Chaos. Dan, yeah, thanks so much for joining us, sir. We appreciate it. We wish the worst of luck to your team in the next couple of games, and we look forward to collectively rooting for the Carolina Hurricanes in the third round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Dan, thanks so much for joining us again at Culture of Losing over on the Twitters and the Islanders Anxiety Podcast. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks a lot, guys. This is great.
See you, man. Hey, we always love having Dan Saraceni on the podcast. And again, thank you for him for taking a solid 30 minutes out of his night to chat with us goobers, because I know I would not be really kindly taking out a half hour to talk if my team were down 0-2.
No, nor would I.
Yeah. You know who was kind enough to talk to us this weekend, Derek?
Who dat, Mike?
Quite possibly one of the most important men in all of hockey. This weekend at Brugaloo, Saturday afternoon, we were fortunate enough to get to spend a few minutes with none other than the keeper of the cup, Mike Bolt. And we wanted to take just a few minutes and share our conversation that we had with him with all of you.
All right, guys, I am live at Brugaloo with none other than the keeper of the cup himself, Mike Bolt. Mike, how's it feel to be back in Raleigh?
It's great to be back here. You know, seeing the excitement here just at the beer fest about the Carolina Hurricanes, and you know, people were walking around in their jerseys and their T-shirts and their hats, and you know, they had a big win yesterday against the Islanders, and you know, here we are in round two. It's great to be back, and you can see the fan base, you can feel the fan base is bigger than when we were here in 06.
Yeah, I mean, the excitement is palpable. It might be the copious amounts of beer that are here, but again, 5 wins so far, 11 more to go. Mike, have you had a chance to catch any of the playoffs? Aside from, obviously, the Columbus surprise, what's been your highlight of the cup run so far?
To be honest with you, it's the entire first round of the playoffs. Like, holy cow. I mean, you always expect a couple of upsets. I mean, this whole first round was so unpredictable, which is awesome. I mean, especially in sports, you don't want anything too predictable, because then it becomes boring. It's like, it's been hard to turn off the TV. I won't lie to you. Even staying up late and then I got to get up early, it's such addicting. It's so much fun to watch, and can't get enough of it, to be honest with you.
Well, Mike, many of the folks listening to this may or may not know you are in one of the most famous pictures in Carolina Hurricanes history. Standing immediately off to the side of Rod Brindamore, I believe, in the middle of a river, with Rod holding the Stanley Cup, chiseled, sweat glistening. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience, standing next to Rod in the river with the cup?
Oh, I remember that very vividly. That was out in Vancouver Island, up in Campbell River, and Mike Commodore was also there. He was on the 06 team, and they're taking picks, and Rod's like, Mike, you got to get in the pitch. And I'm like, all right. And he goes, you got to take your shirt. I go, I'm not taking my shirt off standing next to Rod the Bod. He goes, come on. So I get in there between Mike and Rod. And I'm like, I wonder if they can figure out who the guy that doesn't play hockey is. And, you know, that was it was a lot of fun hanging out with Rod Brindamore and, you know, being up in Campbell River. But, yeah, I remember that. I actually had that photo framed in my house to keep me humble, knowing that I am not in good shape.
You know what? Comparatively, I don't know if any of us are in good shape for Rod the Bod. Mike, obviously a long trip to get here. Thank you guys for being out here with us. Kind of last question from us. What is the most exciting part, knowing that you're going to be back in Raleigh 8 weeks from now on the ice at PNC Arena?
Well, I think every team right now that's left, you mentioned the Carolina Hurricanes have 11 wins, but, you know, I'm neutral. Beginning of the year, I have 31 teams that I'm rooting for, and, you know, when the playoffs started, you're down to 16, and, you know, we're down to, 8 teams now, and, you know, look, everybody's just going to have to tune in. We'll see what happens. We're thrilled that we have to come back here, but, you know, I got to play the neutral card on this one.
Mike plays the neutral card. Well, those of you may not be able to see, Mike's giving me that look. He knows. He knows. He's looking forward to barbecue. He's looking forward to Brugaloo. Folks, thank you to everybody at the Hockey Hall of Fame for giving us just a few minutes with the Keeper of the Cup. He is at MikeBolt4 over on the Twitters. At HHOF is the Hockey Hall of Fame. Make sure you're following him, and we'll see you back here middle of June.
And, you know, Derek, Bolte gave me that, a little bit of that look when I asked him to pick a favorite. He was like, afterwards, he was like, you know, I can't pick a favorite. And I was like, but the Hurricanes are your favorite, right? And he just kind of gave me that look. I imagine it's the same look he gave Brendan Moore when Brendan Moore told him to take off a shirt and get in the river with him.
You serious, Clark?
You serious? Derek, back-to-back-to-back guests. Folks are listening to this podcast, probably getting ready to come out to tonight's tailgate, Game 3, as we prepare to take on the New York Islanders. Lots of great people who are going to be out at tonight's tailgate. Papa Murphy's going to be out there with pizza. New Belgium going to be out there with beer. Ourselves will be out there, you know, shaking babies, kissing hands.
Whoa. Let's flip that one, just, you know, for safety.
Okay.
Yeah, for safety. And there may be a few special guests at this tailgate. I don't want to jinx things. That's your ballpark of jinxing things.
I will absolutely jinx it before the end of the podcast. You know who else is going to be out there? Someone who's got a recent addition, and we're going to let him tell you all about it. And Derek, on tonight's guest-filled edition of Cheaters Never Win, we've got a very special guest, one of our very own. Many of the folks listening tonight know him as Mr. Puck and Sunshine himself, J.C. Bobbitt. Three people may know him as the host of Cheaters Never Pin, but he is doing some very forthright, very giving back to the community things as part of this playoff run. And rather than us talk about it, I thought it would be best to invite JC here onto the podcast to tell all of our listeners what he's got coming up over the next day or so.
Yes. Hello, gentlemen. Hello, fine podcast listeners.
Greetings. So, yeah, JC, tell the people what your Wednesday is shaping up like.
Oh, yeah. It's going
to
be a...
And also, how you got to Wednesday.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun day. So it's going to start at around noon on Wednesday as I pay off a debt I have to the hockey gods. It seems as if during a drunken fit of madness during game 2 of the series against the Caps, I may have made a bet on the Twitter with the hockey gods that if we came back and won that game, I would have a tattoo placed on my hindquarters of the number of the Hurricane that would score the game-winning goal. Well, that did not happen. The series continued. We went 2-2. Then we went down 3-2. And I renewed that bet for who would ever score the series-winning goal. And lo and behold, Game 7, your client, Brock McGinn.
Brock.
Scores the series-winning goal. And so Wednesday at noon, I have an appointment at Warlock Tattoo in Raleigh to have the number 23 emblazoned permanently upon my rear end.
So I got to ask you, JC, you are not a tattoo aficionado the way that others in 328 are. Do you have any other tattoos? Is this your first one?
There are some I've wanted for sure. And I've been kind of thinking about it and planning them out. And this will be number one, though. So this is not how I saw this journey beginning. But, you know, every story starts somewhere.
And what a way to start. Another question, and because I both do and don't want to see the finished product too much in person.
Oh, we're seeing it.
Oh, it's going to happen. We all know how our tailgates operate. But do you have any plans for, like, a design where there'll be a laurel around the 23? Is it just going to be the number 23?
Maybe a Hurricanes logo behind the 23? Give us some detail, JC. I want the folks to be able to picture your fine backside and how it's going to look at about 2:30 tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, boy. So, when the gravity of this situation hit me the other day, I was like, you know,
wait, you're 50 and the gravity hits you.
Oh, yeah, right?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
when it occurred to me this was actually going to have to happen, I was like, cool, they can just dip it in the ink and write 2-3 and I can go out the door. But at this point, I haven't really settled on a design. I've had a couple of ideas. One is to do the 2-3 kind of like the current word mark is, and have like the, you know, the warning flags in the back end of the 3 there. I don't know.
Yeah, because you don't want to see. If you just do the number in like a low weight font, then it looks like a prison tat. And then there's a deeper story that people are going to want to get into.
I considered stick and poking it here myself, but, you know.
Oh. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so JC, when you realized, A, congratulations to you for making a bet with the hockey gods and subsequently paying it off. Too many times that does not happen. But you decided to take this a step further and not only paying off your debt to the hockey gods, but since you were going to go ahead and get our client Brock McGinn's number tattooed across your hindquarter, you decided you want to make potentially a little good to come out of this as well. So tell the folks if they are... if they want to help maybe contribute to the positive karma that is the current Canes Stanley Cup playoff run, how might they be able to help the community and help support you a little bit as you're going down this path tomorrow?
Yeah, so I realized if I could donate a pound of flesh to the cause, everyone out there could donate $23 to the cause in honor of the goal and the tattoo to the Carolina Hurricanes Foundation. So I've kind of been partnering with them, and you can either go straight to their website and donate and say it's for my behind, or I've set up a bit.ly link. It's just bit.ly/JCSST.
So you're partnering with the Hurricanes Foundation, and I think that's fantastic, but I also think it's kind of funny to me that the Hurricanes Foundation is headed by noted germaphobe John Chase. Have you talked to him about this?
Yeah, he's the one. He's the one I got in touch with. They were very reluctant to want to send someone out for this moment due to the location of the event.
I mean, Brock so, could Brock could like trace his signature under the 23.
Oh boy,
it's a little late in the game for me to be throwing curveballs at her.
Derek.
Yeah,
I have something for JC here again. So we're gonna tomorrow's oh, going no. to happen. But JC, are you willing to commit here live in front of God and approximately 22,000 podcast listeners?
Oh, dear God.
If Brock McGinn scores the clinching goal in the Stanley Cup final, will you get Brock McGinn's signature tattooed underneath his 23?
Yeah, let's go for it. Why not?
Say at that point, why not?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you got
to
go
all in. There's a lot that has to go right to get to that point. So, you know, I'll play the odds on this one.
Tiger. That's a value bet.
I was going to say, this is basically Tiger versus the field.
Yeah.
In 2015.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh.
But JC, so can... When folks show up to the Section 328 tailgate, obviously we're not going to encourage you to be showing off this tattoo. How are we all as Twitter people supposed to know that this wasn't just a big talk and you went through with this? Is there going to be some sort of, you know, Facebook Live that folks can go into?
Yeah.
Or what? I mean, how do we make sure that this isn't just a simple ruse by a purveyor of a fine wrestling talk? Dare I call this, how do we confirm this isn't a work?
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the plan at this point is to do it live on the Facebook. Whether that's, you know, look for announcements on my Twitter at JC Bobbitt, JCBOBBITT, and we'll let you know where to watch it live today, tomorrow, whenever this occurs. But yeah, that's the plan. And then if you see me Wednesday, please, this is the one time I will ever agree to you coming up to me and being like, "Can I see your ass?" And I'll go, "Yeah, here you go." So. It's fine. Everybody gets the one. This is it today. Until we win the Stanley Cup and you get to see the signature.
The signature. So, folks, that is if you want to support JC and make a donation on JC's behalf to the Carolina Hurricanes Foundation, that is bit.ly/JC SATTOO. Basically, bit.ly/ JC's tattoo.
Yeah. Or hit him up on the Twitter. He's got it pinned over there, I think. Yeah. So
or come at us and, you know, we'll help you find him
fashion. Always happy to help people part with their money.
Yes.
Whether it's to charity or to our sponsors or anybody else.
Exactly. So JC, kudos to you, sir. Not enough people in this world pay off their debts to the hockey gods. I am even more excited for what the future for this Carolina Hurricanes team has, knowing that we have fans who are as committed as you are. I can't wait to see this design tomorrow. And from the bottom of our hearts, JC, we love you. Folks, if you're not listening to Cheaters Never Pen, they are at Cheaters NVR Pen. Probably one of the top 25 wrestling podcasts in Central Raleigh.
That's about right.
No. Cheaters Never Pen, absolutely phenomenal. JC and Mr. Workrate over there doing the wrestling work and really just do a phenomenal job. Do not get nearly enough love for all the effort and the work that they put in for that. So, JC, thank you guys for what you do for the Cheaters Never Win podcast family. But more importantly, thanks for raising money for a great cause tomorrow and paying off your debt to the hockey gods. Our client, Brock McGinn. Thanks you very much.
Yes, sir. It's good to talk to you guys. We'll see you Wednesday.
See you Wednesday. Yes, and if you haven't donated, that is bit.ly/bit.ly/uppercase J, uppercase C, lowercase s, uppercase T, lowercase A, T-T-O-O. JC's tattoo.
And then make sure to add two special characters, but they can't be the same.
Probably not. I have.
Oh, and you can't use parentheses for some reason because our system doesn't handle those well.
We'll make sure that we have the link up there to support. If you want to make a $23 donation to the Carolina Hurricanes Foundation to basically as an homage to the hockey gods to say thank you for what Brock McGinn and all the joy Brock McGinn and that entire team brought us for closing out the Washington Capitals in round one of the playoffs.
Yep.
Derek, before we can get to the tailgate and me jinxing more things that are going to happen at the tailgate, we got to open up the mailbox and go to that cheat mail.
One of these days, we're going to get that rhythm figured out, and it's going to be fantastic, and no one's going to be ready for it.
No, we're not.
We'll have like...
We'll be doing it. We also have the continuation of the JC tattoo contest to talk about. We'll have that at the end.
Okay, so let's go to the cheat mail here. The first one from our buddy Al Hood at Al B. Hood on the Bird Machine.
Hey, Al.
With the Adam Fox trade today that we did not discuss at all.
Adam Fox, for those who may not have heard, was traded by the Carolina Hurricanes to the New York Rangers for a 2019 second-round pick and a third-round pick that could conditionally become another second-round pick should Adam Fox play more than, I believe, 30 or more games for the New York Rangers next season.
Correctamundo. So, Al's question is, chances the Canes make all three picks they have in the first two rounds in the 2019 draft?
5.7%.
Hmm. All right. I think that's probably about right.
It's Trevor Van Riemsdyk likely.
This team does not need more draft picks right now. We need an impact player now, and having three picks in the top 37 can do that.
Yes, absolutely.
Those are valuable pieces to a team that knows they are a few years away.
Yeah, three picks in the top 37 could be potentially trade you for something substantial. So going to be interesting to see how all of that plays out. Derek, I'm going to go, since we're already well into the podcast, I am going to hit you with one from our buddy at Canalytics. Playoff beard, shave the playoff beard. He's got a couple of choices. Shave nothing, shave a little bit of the neck beard, or kind of groom the whole thing up. Just so that way he doesn't look like a homeless man. So what's your feelings on how are you allowed to properly groom, if at all, a playoff beard while your team is still in the NHL playoffs?
And we discuss this as two guys who are not currently growing playoff beards.
And cannot.
Right. Yeah. We can't for, let's say, work purposes.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Anyway, I think trimming up the neck beard is okay because neck beards are gross. Unless you're Kyle Orton, you're probably not known for a neck beard. So I think you can trim the neck beard up. Others disagree. I think it's personal preference, but stick to what you're doing, I think, is the key.
I agree with you that grooming of the neck beard is okay. I don't want to get anybody with that really weird, like, giant red bumps.
Because you can also trim the mustache a little bit. So, like, if you can grow a really bushy mustache, your mustache hairs don't, like, curl into your mouth. And then you're, like, beginning to floss with your own facial hair. Because that sounds unsettling.
It does. It does. Derek, let's keep this going.
Another question from Canalytics back to back because he had some bangers. related to the Adam Fox trade, can we stop trying to determine the winner of the Hamilton trade and move on with our mullet-enriched lives?
No, we cannot, because they ended up with Bill Peters. So regardless of how the trade went, we're all winners at life. Derek, this one from at Spencer328, Jack Spencer. Who's more important for us to get back Wednesday night? Svetch, Marty, or Fur Daddy, and why?
Svetch, this team needs an offensive boost, and he can do it. Second most is Martinook, and I think those two are really, really close as far as being the most important guys we could get back.
Yeah, and here's the shocking thing. You know, Michael Ferland was such a key part of this power play and his power play prowess, one of the reasons he came to this club. I just think that goes to show just how important Svetch has become and potentially Martinook's leadership, both on and off the ice. I mean, he is forming himself a legend to eclipse Chad LaRose any minute now.
Oh, and I'm very good with that. This from Carolina Sports Fan at Carolina Sport 13. Can the crowd at PNC Arena break 120 decibels on Wednesday's game?
Yes.
That was quick.
We will.
Do you want to read me a question?
Oh, sure. Why not? Why don't I go with, let's see. Bobble 813 asked a question about the John Forslund. I think Dan Saraceni took a really good job of kind of taking care of that. This one from JT Garrity over on the Twitter. How close will this year's team resemble next year's team? This is interesting. A couple of people have brought this up to me with the depth that's in the pipeline, and you've seen, you know, the likes of how well guys like Clark Bishop have played, how comfortable we all seemingly are with Ned coming up, with Jake Bean coming up, and how well this Checkers team has been playing during their initial playoff foray here. How different is this team going to look next year, Derek?
I don't think it's going to look as different as this year's team looks from last year. So the only unrestricted free agents that we have of roster players are Justin Williams, who I would assume is back, Michael Ferland, and both of our goaltenders. So I think half those guys are going to be back. The RFAs will all probably be back, and we'll, you know, maybe shuffle some deck chairs a little bit. But I think this team is going to look pretty similar to this year's team.
Yeah, I think there is a need. There is a need for some power play help. I also think there's guys that, again, are in the pipeline that are going to fill a lot of those needs, i.e. Martin Natchez is probably going to be up with the team this year, next year, and fill maybe one of those spots, as well as a guy like Jake Bean. So, yeah. Derek, last question from you.
Yeah, last one I got is from our pal Dan Spencer at Dantendo64. F. Mary Kill, the Molson Miracle, Game 7 against Buffalo in 06, and Game 7 against the Caps last week.
I don't think you're going to like this one, Derek. And here's the thing. I don't even know if there's a right answer to this one. That's what makes it a great F. Mary Kill.
Mm-hmm. I do agree with you on that.
I'm going to marry the Molson Miracle, because I think the Molson Miracle was my first memory of sheer hockey exuberance. It was the moment in time that cemented myself, and I knew exactly where I was, what I was doing, who I was with, and how it all happened. I was with great friends, and we celebrated for most of the night. I'm going to F the Caps game, primarily because it had been so long and it was so touch and go for the entire time, that if you won, it was joyous, and if you lost, you were still okay with it. I'm killing the Buffalo game because I never, ever, ever want to have to think about just the nastiness of the Buffalo fan base in my arena ever again, and I wish them nothing but pain for the rest of their worthless, miserable lives.
I agree with you on that one, and I would just flip the Molson Miracle and Game 7 against the Caps.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
I have no more cheat mail questions for
you. I have one last one, and I thought this one was interesting. And this one kind of goes against completely what Oliver was saying. And one last F. Mary Kill. Not the people, just the player edition. This one is from Cretin _ Valifor.
Respect the underscore.
F. Mary Kill, Fox as a Ranger, Jeff Skinner as a Sabre, Elias Lindholm as a Flame? And I'm assuming which one by maybe Mary would you say would you like to have back? Let's use that as the premise.
Okay. Then I will marry Lindholm, F. Skinner, and kill Fox.
I think that's easy enough because we have defense.
Yeah. And we never saw what Fox could do. Maybe he's great. Maybe he's nothing. We have no idea.
Maybe he's Ryan Murphy.
Yeah. We have a no idea.
Who seems like a perfectly nice guy to have peanuts stuffed in his Range Rover.
Yes.
Derek.
Yes.
Before we start talking a little bit about the podcast, tailgate and who's going to be there, you have a delicious beverage from one of my favorite breweries on the planet at a price which was shocking to even me.
Yeah, so I swung my bottle mix on Saturday, went in there, and everyone was at Brugaloo. I walked in, it was a nice day, and there weren't that many people in there, and I was like, what the hell's going on? Brugaloo plus beautiful weather, so everyone is outside. So I got to walk around and spend some time and drink a pint of beer and talk to the folks and find out some cool new stuff. Like they had a double IPA brewed with honey from Hardywood, which was fantastic. And they set me up with this Citra Sunshine Slacker from Evil Twin Brewing. It's a IPA that's only 4.5%. So it's really, really nice and drinkable. You can have a few of them at a tailgate. Evil Twin makes a lot of really good beers. They make Even More Jesus, which Mike is quite fond of. But the nice thing about this beer is Evil Twin has had a reputation for making expensive beers. And I don't know if they got a new canning line or a new deal with somebody. But now, like this tall boy of Citra Sunshine Slacker was like $3 or so. I think that's a heck of a deal for a tall boy of any kind of beer you want to drink, especially the quality of Evil Twin. This, to me, despite being described as an IPA, doesn't really taste like one to me. It's more of just a regular pale ale. I'd almost call it a hoppy pilsner. It's a really like pale golden yellow color. The aroma on it isn't too sharp. And while I get some hop there, it tastes more like a pilsner with some Citra hops added to it as opposed to a hoppy ale.
For and I just took a little sip out of Derek's glass there. For someone who doesn't really enjoy a lot of the IPAs, I probably pick up a little bit more of the hops than you do. It's a nice, it would be like a really dry pilsner, but then that Citra just sits on the tongue. Mm-hmm. And just like, I'm like, so yeah, it's definitely an IPA, but it's not one, at least for me, that is like overwhelming on the front, particularly on the palate. On the palate, it's almost session ale like, but yeah. The linger definitely gives you that a little bit of that sticky Citra resin.
And at 4.5% with this type of flavor, and it's not heavy, there's not a lot of malt in this beer at all. It's a great tailgate beer. So if you want to swing by Bottle Mix today, Grab some of these, grab your favorite beers, grab some wine if you want, grab some bubbly to celebrate before or after the game. They will hook you up with those things. If you can't make it for Wednesday's game, make it for Friday's game. Grab some of these beers because I think they'll be great. It's supposed to be like 87 or so both days. So this is a really good warm weather beer. If it tastes good inside at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, it'll probably taste really good at about 5:15 in the East Lot grass with all of us. So swing by Bottle Mix. They're on Creedmoor Road, just south of 540, a few miles north of Crabtree. If you live in North Raleigh, not too inconvenient to swing by Bottle Mix on your way to the PNC Arena.
There you go. And then if you're going to the game tomorrow or Friday, swing by, come see us. Again, thank you to our sponsors. There is no entry ticket into the tailgate. There is no cost to get into the tailgate. Our goal for tailgate since day one of forming Section 328 has been to create a community space where everybody can come, talk hockey, feel welcome, don't be an asshole. And hey, if we've got sponsors who are willing to help us out by providing a little bit of free beer and a little bit of free food for those who are A, hungry, and B, of age, we encourage you to come out and join us. So thank you to Papa Murphy's, who's bringing the pizza oven out tomorrow to help cook pizzas for everybody. Thank you to New Belgium, who is bringing out some sweet, delicious beverages for us to enjoy on top of what you may bring for yourself from the Bottle Mix and the Bottle Mix Beer Review. And just absolutely come out, have a good time. Come say hi to the Section 328 folks. Most of us will be out there tomorrow. Come find Mike, Derek, Tom, Oliver, JC. Ask to maybe see JC's latest edition. But also, maybe come say hi to Michelle McMahon. Michelle McMahon jinxing it, dropping by the Section 328 tailgate tomorrow. Many of you know and love her not only from her work as a former Carolina Hurricanes pregame host, but also from the work that she did over at the NHL Network, currently working for Big Ten Network. Couldn't miss the opportunity to come to Raleigh for a game. So she's going to join us for a little while tomorrow out in the East Lot. Come say hi to Michelle. Come say hi to us. Come say hi to New Belgium. Come say hi to Poppy Murphy's. And then come say hi to a Game 3 win.
Also,
ooh,
do you want me to do this one?
Yeah.
Come say hi to Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. Do it.
Hamilton's going to be at the tailgate. Not Dougie.
No.
Hamilton the pig.
Hamilton the pig. Dropping by the tailgate tomorrow.
Yeah. So it's going to be a good time. Like Mike said, we have food and beer that's going to be there, but it may not be enough to fill your belly and fill your liver to its to your own control level. So please feel free to bring some of your own food, some of your own beverage, but our sponsors are there to help you out to enjoy some of their wares.
Exactly. So we hope to have a great time tomorrow.
Yeah, go to section328.com. We have a tailgate post that's up there. It's pinned to our Twitter page at section_328.
Expect that most of us are going to be out there 4:30, 5 o'clock tomorrow.
You're supposed to say respect the underscore, but I was going to say we have a map on there. If you're not familiar with like the East Lot or the 2000 Lot, there's a map and we have it highlighted where we tailgate. So please do come out and say hello.
Yeah, and Friday's tailgate might be a little longer because you know, there's some folks who might be taking a half day Friday, and you know, maybe we'll maybe if we're up 3-0. Maybe we'll have a little sauce out there. I don't know. Maybe we'll have a little cornhole tournament. Maybe folks want to take on the world champs of the world. Maybe folks just like this podcast and want to go over to patreon.com/section328, support the podcast, support our sponsors. If you can't make it out to a game, go out to Papa Murphy's and get yourself one of those take and bake pizzas. Go over to Bottle Mix, get some beers. Hey, here's an idea. Go to Bottle Mix and buy a little bit of New Belgium. Help everybody out. You know what's going to help us out? Goals, goalkeeping, and winning. Two more games, Derek, and we're halfway there.
You shut your filthy mouth, Mike.
I got to go put some pants on, Derek. Until next time, my name's Mike.
I'm Derek.
And, oh, my pants are gone.